When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 16, The Chamber of Secrets.
The title chapter.
The title chapter.
I was like, wait, did you just walk into something? No.
And I was like, and it's the same thing again.
It is indeed. Does every book have a title chapter?
Oh, I don't. Does Philosopher's Stone?
Does it?
I don't know if it does.
Because the last chapter is like The Man with Two Faces.
It's not the Sorcerer's Stone. Yeah. And then like when they figure it out, the chapter is called like Nicholas Flamel, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think it is. I don't think it's got a chapter for itself.
I know,
I don't think The Prisoner of Azkaban does either.
I don't think it does. I was going to say, yeah. I know there's a Goblet of Fire.
There is Goblet of Fire for sure.
Is there Order of the Phoenix or is it Grimald Place?
Great question. I feel like Order of the Phoenix is probably in there.
Okay.
Is the Half-Blood Prince?
The Half-Blood Prince feels like it could be.
It does feel like it could be the Deathly Hallows feels like it could be, but also I think that might be Xenophilia's Lovegood.
Oh, you're that right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, this one has it, and it's this one.
Okay, perfect.
Which I almost feel like it's like a. Do you feel like the title is maybe like one chapter too soon?
I sort of do.
Like, I know. I
turned the page and I was like, oh my gosh, Chamber of Secrets, we're there. It's happening.
We're there.
And it's like most of it happens. Like most of the chapter happens in like hallways.
Right. It's like they're like getting to the chamber.
Yes.
It seems like because like he like steps inside and like chapter ends and it seems like the next chapter should be like the Chamber of Secrets.
Yes. It's like, okay, now we're in here. But no, that's not the case. So instead, we've got a chapter that's sort of like, it's very interesting. I actually listened to and read it twice because I was picking up on sort of like an interesting little like ism here about like writing.
Okay.
Which is that there's typically a rule when it comes to writing that you can use coincidences to get your character into trouble, but usually don't use a coincidence to get them out of trouble. So yeah. Like, you know, you wouldn't get them down to the bottom of the Chamber of Secrets and it's like, oh, by weird happenstance, there's just a couple of racing brooms that hang out down here. Somebody must have left them. And it's like, okay, so now they have a way out, like, you know, just because there happens to be brooms down there or something.
Right.
Like, that's usually not okay. So a lot of what's happening inside of this chapter is a lot of coincidence. And a lot of the coincidence is getting the characters into trouble because it is, like, at the start of the chapter, you're basically starting with McGonagall announcing, or is it Sprout? Someone announces that, like, the mandrakes are ready, that everybody who's petrified will be better as of tomorrow.
Yes.
And so, you know, like if you're the reader at home and you're going through it for the first time or like you're like young set of eyes here, you might be like, oh, how about that? Book's almost over. They found a solution.
Exactly. Like basically as of tomorrow morning, mystery solved.
Right. But like if you're rereading it and you get to that point, you're like, wait a second. If they're going to solve everything tomorrow, how do we still get to the key plot, the climax of our story here? And the answer is basically, and we can go through it as we like examine the chapter kind of like sentence by sentence, page by page as we do. But it's sort of, there's like a mounting stack of bizarre coincidences that lead us from a scenario where, hey, the mandrakes are ready. As of tomorrow, everything will be fine. And then pretty much everything else that happens, it's like, would that happen? Oh, okay. But then they ran into someone. Oh, okay. But then what? This happened? It's like, it's very odd the way that like the story plays out in order to find a way to get them
to the chamber
with Lockhart to the chamber.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay.
All right.
We got there. So, I don't know if it's a critique because it, like I said, it's okay to use coincidence to get them into trouble. It's just a lot of coincidence.
It's a bunch. Well, yeah. Let's see. Let's dive on in and we can start examining them. Well, first of all, what do you think of the chapter art here?
Chapter art's pretty impressive.
Chapter art's pretty good on this one. I like the spookiness of it. It's just a giant snake skin. And then I guess you have Harry, Ron, and Gilderoy back there.
Yes, you know. Yes. Is Harry holding like a torch?
It looks like he's holding a torch.
Like a flaming torch, which is, I mean, it's kind of cool. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a world where there was a flaming torch, but the thing is that there's not. He's using Lumos with his wand.
Oh, you're right.
It's like,
Lumos, yeah, this makes it, if that's the case, it makes it look like Lumos like lights your wand on like artificial fire or something.
It does almost seem that way.
That I've always imagined it more like a flashlight or something.
Like a flashlight, a little tiny like LED bulb on the end of your wand. It's just kind of like that. It's a little bit brighter than it should be, but why not?
Yeah, it's magic. You know, it can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no, very cool chapter art. I think it's very, very menacing, very like, oh man, okay.
Yeah, like that's a big snake. That's a big snake.
That's a big snake.
Right. So I love the chapter starts where Ron like is upset. He says, all those times you're in the bathroom and she was just three toilets away and we could have asked her and I'm like, Ron's upset because he didn't take advantage of this over the past like few months, and I'm like, just imagine what Dumbledore thinks. It's like, 50 years, I didn't even think of it.
What killed you?
Like, yeah, no one's concerned about that. No one asked. It is so unbelievable to me that no one ever asked Myrtle how she died.
I know it does. It does seem very, very unlikely. And poor Myrtle, like by the time somebody does ask her, she's like, I've been waiting 50 years.
I know. She's like so happy. That's almost like proof that no one has asked her because she's like, fine, someone cares.
Right. Yeah, that's really what's sad about it is that it's like, you know, Myrtle is being like bullied by like, oh, what's her name? You always remember.
Olive Hornby.
Yeah. Yeah, you know she's being bullied by them. And it's like, but then it's like she dies. And like, no, there's no investigation whatsoever.
No one even cares. They're like, yeah, it was Hagrid. It was a spider. That's it. No reason to ask any more questions at all. End of story.
We're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, so they're basically, the other thing that's kind of interesting too about like where the state of mind of the school is that like throughout most of the school year, there's been attacks, and despite the attacks, they've just continued to hold lessons.
Yeah.
And then there's the day that there's like the double attack on Hermione and Penelope Clearwater, where everything seems to get really intense really fast, and everybody's kind of up in arms. But as we start this chapter, and with the promise of the Mandrakes, you know, restorative draft en route, it's basically like, yeah, Dumbledore basically said business as usual. So business as usual means exams.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay.
All right.
Yep. All right.
Yeah. It does seem a little surprising, but also maybe it doesn't seem surprising. Like, you know, she even says like, we kept the school open. What do you think? You know,
well, I guess it's a good point. Know? It's like, we wouldn't be keeping it open if we weren't going to be here to like, you know, test what you've learned.
Yeah. But at the same rate, it's been a fairly traumatic year.
Right.
You know, might be good. Let's see. Oh, I love how Neville, like, so she tells them they're going to have the exams. Neville accidentally vanishes a leg of his desk. And I just love the little, like, McGonagall restored it with a wave of her own wand. Like, it's such ease. It's just like, it's like a, you don't get to see the adults doing magic a ton of the time.
I know. Yeah. That was one of the things I really loved about the Fantastic Beasts saga was, like, just getting to see just how good at magic Newt was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're like, whoa, okay. Like when they're students, like, they are really just like, get, like, you know, kind of cutting their teeth on this whole magic thing. But like once they're out there in the real world, like they can do some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I was looking at the next thing.
That's okay. I know.
It's like, well, yeah, when you're watching Newt and Fantastic Beasts, it's like, oh man, the advantages of being a wizard are so magnified.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like just in regular everyday life, like it's a, it's nonstop. It's so fun. Like when he's in the bank and stuff.
Yes.
Especially.
Yes.
Let's see. This is a random bit of punctuation that I circled. Here it says, the exams will therefore take place as usual, and I trust you are all studying hard. And the next sentence is, studying hard! Exclamation point. It had never occurred to Harry that there would be exams. I just love that there's an exclamation point after it. I know this is such a silly thing to point out, but it's just like, it's like you could feel Harry thinking it. Like, you could feel his anger in this sentence.
Yes, yes, because it's not even in quotation marks or anything. It's not. He's not.
No one's saying
it. He's not saying it. This is like the narrator, again, sort of like interjecting the injustice of the thing. Like,
What? Studying hard? There's not even a question. It's just. Anyway, that's all.
Yep.
Yep, very tiny thing. Let's see. Harry's looking down. He's trying to transfigure rabbits into slippers. So nice little easy transformation, it feels like.
It does feel pretty easy. Yeah. I always love how on the nose, because like bunny-shaped slippers are sort of like this like very classic version of what slippers look like. Which, I mean, you know, I don't know. I have house slippers and they're not bunny-shaped.
They're not bunny-shaped. You know who has bunny-shaped slippers?
Who's that?
Neville.
Neville has bunny slippers. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I wonder if he got them from an older student who had successfully passed this particular class.
That'd be so funny.
It's like, were those slippers formerly animals?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be so weird to be walking around like, I hope this magic doesn't just like undo itself mid-step.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That'd be terrible.
That'd be weird.
I highlighted that piece as well. Just a little bit of trivia. It's like, what was Harry attempting to transform the white rabbits into in his second year transfiguration class?
Yeah. Yeah.
Slippers.
Slippers. Rabbits into slippers. Then Ron brings up an amazing point. He says, can you imagine me taking exams with this? He asked Harry, which is, he's talking about his broken wand. And I'm just like, again, it's like, I can't imagine how you've made it this far into the year.
Yes, you know? It's like, you would think that of all of the required items for a wizard to have at school, like for all intents and purposes, Ron went to school this year without a wand.
Without a wand,
like,
basically.
It is like, not functional.
Yeah, like it's not... Yeah, we have not seen it perform correctly at all.
Right.
You know, like, I know that Ron having a broken wand is like a critical point of them surviving Lockhart, like later in the chapter. And this is the real reason he breaks the wand. But it's just like, I can understand maybe at the beginning of the year, Mrs. Weasley is like, well, that's what you get for stealing the car. But like, eventually, like, you know, reasonable thinking should take over again and be like, okay, but you actually do need a wand to go to school.
Right, like, right. Like, otherwise, we're burning a whole year here where you're not making any progress. In
any progress
at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. I feel like that's like one of those where we almost need like a small handful of instances like where he's successful. I mean, I guess we get like the eat slugs.
Yeah,
which, like backfire, so it's sort of like a setup for later, but it really is like a lot of, it must have been so difficult to think of a good way to have Lockhart, like this is like one of those coincidences that I'm more okay with, because this has been set up for the entire book. It's central to the plot, like in and out. It's woven through the fabric of the story.
I mean, even down to like it's like even into down to like Dobby appearing at the Dursleys.
Yes.
Is like a directly leads to Lockhart's wand backfiring.
Right. So basically like the setup for like what happens to Lockhart in this chapter has been established for forever and for always. So again, since we're going to spend some time on that, that's a good one to point out. It's like, that's good coincidence at play, even though it doesn't totally make sense for Ron. It's like, that's all very like, ingrained into the story.
Yeah. So I love that then McGonagall does announce that the Mandrakes are going to be ready, which I almost feel like is kind of a mistake that she announces it, like that they're going to like have mystery solved, because like it sort of tips off the perpetrator, you know, ahead of time.
Oh, like that we're about to like find like the resolution to this, to this particular thing.
Like, hey, we don't know who you are, but guess what? Tomorrow we're going to find out. It's like, and sure, I feel like if she doesn't make this announcement, maybe Ginny doesn't act.
I know, that's a good point. I feel like I always underestimate the amount that by unpetrifying each of these students, what information it will provide. Like usually I just think it's like everybody's just so preoccupied with like getting them back to life.
Yeah.
You know, that like it I usually don't put enough weight on the fact that they're going to be able to like relay information.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So, yeah, you're right. Like if this is like more of like a, you know, quasi hostage situation or something, you know, it's like, it's like, you know, don't like tip your hand.
Right. Yeah. Like don't tell them, just restore them tomorrow morning, ask the information and then go get the person.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it does. And that is the big setup, though, because that sets up some coincidence that happens like a little bit later in the chapter that I think helps the argument a little bit. Because
yeah.
It's like there is a reason why something would happen today in particular.
Yeah. Yes, there is. Like, yeah, that, like, this is the catalyst for, yeah, like Ginny being taken down, I think, is the announcement.
Yes.
But I love, also, we can't skate past it, is Oliver Woods. Interpretation of the good news is Quidditch matches are back on. Just like Wood is so single-minded all of the time.
All the time. Yes. He is like heavily and completely like his entire Hogwarts experience has revolved around what he intends to do on the Quidditch pitch.
Yes.
It feels. Yeah. But I highlighted that as well and just wrote, oh, Wood.
Yeah.
It's like people have been in the hospital wing, some of which for like literal months.
Right.
And you're just excited about getting back to the game.
To him, the tragedy isn't that people are petrified. It's that because people are petrified, there's no Quidditch.
Yeah.
That's the real thing here. There's another example of Ron predicting the future here. Sort of. Just Ron says like Hermione will probably have all the answers when they wake her up, which is like, yep, she does.
Yep, you're right. Yep.
Yep. Which, I mean, maybe that's not... I don't know. There is, like, this sort of, like... I feel like this happened a lot in the last book where, like, Ron would sort of, like, predict the future a bunch.
Yeah, I know what you mean. He is, like, oddly on point more often than I think people give him credit for. Like, out of the trio, oftentimes, I think, like, Ron's contributions are like kind of like easy to overlook just because like Hermione's so smart and Harry is so like central and brave. And a lot of times like Ron is just sort of like filling in gaps of like, you know, what it's like to grow up like in like the wizarding world, that things that like Hermione and Harry might not have.
Right.
Which, if, you know, to be fair, is a wealth of knowledge in and of itself. But yeah, I do think a lot of times Ron does, he's kind of got like his finger on the pulse a little bit.
Absolutely.
On that exact note, he follows it up with, she hasn't studied. It might be kinder to leave her till the exams are over. And that's like one of those where it's like, I could totally see a world where Hermione wakes up and she's like, exams next week? What?
I think that actually is what happens.
Is that right?
Yeah. Studied. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Probably aces-ism anyway.
Yep. So let's see. Then Ginny shows up, who's finally ready to spill the beans about it being her. I guess because she knows now she's about to be found out for certain.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do like the fact, though, that like Ginny has always struggled talking in front of Harry. And I do like the fact that like it says that like Ginny came down and sat next to Ron. And it kind of seems like she's like sort of not... looking at like Harry in particular. So it's like, in order to like speak in front of him, it's kind of like she's having to like sort of like keep her eyes like averted away.
Yeah. So, that's very good. It's like that's also been established. So it's like why is it so hard for Ginny to tell them? It's like, well, not only because it's like very bad news for her, but it's like she just can't talk in front of Harry in the best of times.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Yep. So there is that. But as she is about to tell them, Percy shows up, of course, and interrupts everything.
Coincidence,
indeed. I also don't even think what he shows up. He says, if you finished eating, I'll take that seat, Ginny. I'm starving. I'm sorry. Aren't they giant benches? Like, you're going to make her move? Isn't there another side you can sit on, Percy? Like, this doesn't... I can't imagine anyone being like, I'll take that leave. I'm gonna sit there.
No, that's exactly what I mean. It's like, there is important information that is about to be relayed from Ginny, who is absolutely vital to this entire situation. And if not for Percy's arrival and like dismissal of her from the table, which wouldn't make sense in any other situation,
right?
Like, it's like these are big tables. There's plenty of room. The entire like Gryffindor, house can all sit at the table at once. Like, it's not like they have to like, you know, come in sessions or something.
Yeah.
Sort of like, you know, oh, I got third period lunch this like
right,
today.
Yes.
Like, it's like she's about to tell them, and then Percy's like, Ginny, could you leave, please?
Yeah. It's like that just, there's no reason for that to happen. There's no reason for him to not just sit next to Ginny, who's also his sister.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Like, there's also, why are you sitting with Ron and Harry and Ginny? Don't you have like friends in your year, Percy? Probably not.
She's petrified, Jay.
Yeah.
Okay. Be
yeah.
a little
One
more
friend.
With the situation.
That'd be at the wrong table, Ben. Yeah. Dead giveaway.
No.
Petrified giveaway. No, you're absolutely right. Anyway, and also, this is one I know you've been listening to book as you read it, but there is one line here where Ginny leaves and Percy and, you know, they're all like upset because They're like, but she was about to tell us something important. And Percy is convinced that she was about to spill the beans about him and Penelope.
Yes.
Yes. And he's like trying to like save face really quick. And one of my favorite Jim Dale lines in the entire series is the amount of glee Ron has about whatever it is Ginny walked in on. And he says, "What were you doing, Percy?" And he's like, "I'm not doing it justice at all." It is so good the way he says it, because it's like the tone shifts entirely.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Like Ron is sort of like, okay, one of my best friends, petrified, people in the castle, Chamber of Secrets, you know, all this stuff going on. But hold up, my older brother has got a secret that Ginny knows about. I can put everything else aside for this.
Yes. Very, very good delivery if you've listened to the Jim Dale audio. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I do. It is truly spectacular. Yeah, yeah. Rather really top shelf indeed.
Oh man, this whole book's just a good one for Jim Dale, because he gets to do Lockhart in this one. And Dobby is so many good ones.
I know, yeah. Anywhere. Yep, it's so great.
Let's see. So they're going to History of Magic by Gilderoy Lockhart, who is convinced that the danger is out of the way and that this is not worth the trouble. Let's see. I love that they're still making him patrol through the night, though.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Because it seemed he's been up most of the night patrolling the fourth floor. He's not able to talk his way out of it. Like, he still has to do this like annoying job on the side.
Well, when you see the way that, like, the rest of the teachers treat him, it's almost as if there's a world where they're all working in shifts and they're like, "Gilderoy, you got the fourth floor, right? You can do it by yourself.
You can do it by yourself."
Like, I could see a world where McGonagall's just sort of like, "Yeah, we'll split up all the other duties and take turns, and you know, everybody can sleep in shifts."
Everyone else has like a 1 hour shift and they just take turns.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
"Gilderoy, you're so talented. Why don't you take the whole fourth floor all night?
All night. Just 12-hour shift. Just you'll 12 be fine.
Yeah, you can do it.
You can also teach all day tomorrow too, right? No big deal.
Young lad like yourself.
Yes.
Not going to be a problem."
But so this is another one of those instances where, well, I guess for one, we got to mention the fact just that Lockhart is still just absolutely convinced, really for no actual great reason, that it's going to be Hagrid.
Yeah.
But he's obviously very frustrated with the fact that he is still having to do this particular task. And this is like where Harry sort of like, you know, plays into Lockhart's like ego a little bit. And it's another one of those where it's sort of like this would be like the next like little coincidence for me, or the next like little circumstance. It's sort of like, well, that worked out well for them. And then it'll like fold on itself a little bit. But basically they're like, you know, like, they're all going to be fine by tomorrow, Lockhart. Like, why don't you just go on and take off? You know, like, I realize you've been like staying up all night and doing all these things, and basically,
we can take it from here.
Yeah, and it's like one of those things where it's like, it really feels like, even as thick as Lockhart is, it's like, as much as he's committed to everything else to be as tired as he is, it doesn't feel like you give up right now.
I know this is like an annoying, because it's like he's escorting the entire class, and it's just Harry and Ron talking to him, and he's like, "You know what? You're right, boys. See ya." Yes. It's like, it feels like none of the rest of the class has a problem with this, and it feels like maybe they would. They'd be like, "Hey, wait, what? What are you going? No, like, you know, some of them don't think he's a fraud, or I bet even if they do, I'm sure they're more comfortable with him there. Like, having some of them are still scared, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so it's so funny, because I love how it like it shakes out here, because Lockhart says, "You know, Weasley, I think I will. I really should go prepare for my next class." And then Ron says, "Prepare for his class." Ron sneered after him, calling to curl his hair more like, and highlighted it and wrote in all caps, "More like."
I know. I also highlighted it, calling to curl his hair more like. Great line by Ron. Ron's having a good chapter.
He is having a great chapter.
Yes. Yep. So that immediately Harry and Ron take this opportunity to separate themselves from the rest of the class so they can go try
when
and talk.
When all of a sudden,
McGonagall
shows up. What are the odds?
Yeah. Shouldn't she be escorting a class somewhere else? Didn't she just teach a class, probably?
Probably indeed. Yeah. It's like, so the coincidence number next is that it's sort of like they're going somewhere, but wait, no, somebody's going to interrupt them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So it's like another like little step in. It's like, we got to keep guiding the story where we need the story to go.
Right. Exactly.
Yep. So yeah, McGonagall shows up, and very quickly, to Harry's credit, he basically starts thinking on his feet, and he's just sort of like, you know, we've been thinking about Hermione, and I feel like we really need to go and see her. We haven't seen her for a long time, and, you know, maybe we could go, like, you know, let her know that the mandrakes are almost ready. Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And McGonagall, out of nowhere, has, like a total, like, soft spot moment herself, where she's like, similar to Lockhart, who's just, like, walked away. She's like, you know, that's a really good point. I'm going to allow you to head off unescorted.
It does, like, I love this McGonagall moment because, like Harry's lie, like, appeals to her, like, more emotional side and, like, totally works.
Yes.
And, like, I love seeing this side of McGonagall.
I agree with that.
But yeah. It is unlikely to me that she does not escort them to the hospital wing.
Right.
Which I guess doesn't really make a difference because, like, you know, like, they'd still end up there. It's not like if she was there, it would have been different.
Right, that's
but
true.
It does seem like maybe she would have. I'm before Professor Binns where you've gone. Like, yeah, you go. I'll go tell the professor that you're not here.
Right.
Yeah. That'll be what I do.
The professor who doesn't know anybody's names and barely even realizes that he has a class in front of him.
Exactly.
He's going to be worried.
Yeah. But do you think Professor Binns has to do escort duty?
I have no idea.
You know, like, what's he going to do?
I also have no idea.
We know that ghosts are no good against the basilisk.
We know that.
Or the threat.
Right.
Yeah.
But so this ends up, I mean, again, so coincidentally, this works out rather well, though, because they are like, well, I guess at this point in time, we pretty much need to go up to the hospital wing. So it's like, but, like, otherwise, they have zero intention of going there.
Yeah.
Like, this is not part of their plan. But because their other plan was interrupted, they're like, well, we may as well. And the thing that's interesting about that is that now this unplanned trip up to go see Hermione, where they're going to go and talk to a petrified person, who Madame Pomfrey's like, there's just no point in talking to a petrified person, does yield additional information. That then continues to further the plot.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Where, like, it's kind of like, okay, this wasn't supposed to happen, and yet it did. It's almost like there was no other logical way to get them there. So it's like a rather, like, convoluted path to, like, getting to Hermione all of a sudden.
I know. And it's almost a little bit weird because, like, it didn't need to be this convoluted, because I think last chapter there was that line from Madame Pomfrey where she was like, nope, no more visitors. There's every chance the culprit will come to finish them off or whatever. So it's like, there's, like, a reason they haven't visited Hermione before now.
True.
But like they, I guess it's like, if they had, which they probably would have, they probably would have found the piece of paper earlier. But then if they knew it earlier, then, like, they could have done something about it before Ginny was taken. So there's, like, a lot of, like, oh, wait, let me arrange the puzzle pieces such that things happen this way.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, it's like, it's so, like, it's a little convoluted.
It's definitely like a slider puzzle where it's like, okay, we got to have this happen so that can happen, and this can't happen till that's happened. In order to, like, stall that, we need this line here.
Yeah. Why can't students come visit their petrified friends?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, no, because the killer might show up to kill them. And it's like, isn't that but you're escorting students around the hallways with just, like, a professor there. Like, certainly Madame Pomfrey herself is just a witch, right? She's an adult.
Yeah, capable, you know, of, like, looking over them.
Right, yeah, yes. looking over them or sounding. Like, it doesn't seem unreasonable to want to visit the petrified students.
No, definitely, you know? Not. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah.
It's totally one of those things. So,
but anyway, you're right. They end up there.
Yes, they end up there where basically, like, you know, they right away realize, yeah, there's not a whole lot, but they do also see that she has got something in her hand. And the thing that they have in their hand is very vital information, which I think is basically just outlining that the day that Hermione realized something and rushed off to the library without telling anybody what she realized, you know,
which
again,
that is a coincidence, though, that I'll let slide, because Hermione always does this.
That's
this is like
true.
A character trait more than anything.
I mean, it probably speaks to how much Hermione only, like what she's saying, she's sure of in most instances. And it's like, so she's able to, like, know that she's, like, backed. And in this case, she's like, I think, but let me go check before I say anything.
Right.
You know, so it's like, so she runs off. This is where we get the good description of the basilisk.
Yes, we do.
King of serpents.
King of serpents in all capital letters. Bam. And I will, let's see. I highlighted this. It says, the basilisk has a murderous stare, and all who are fixed with the beam of its eye shall suffer instant death. So I also added in the word laser.
Laser vision, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I highlighted the exact same thing because I was sort of like, We never picked up on this before.
I know.
But it almost kind of seems like basilisk has laser vision.
No laser vision, man. It's leaving scorch marks. There's burn marks. It burns the camera. It burns Nick. It burns the stone wall next to Mrs. Norris or whatever.
Yeah, the scorch marks.
Yeah. Whatever beam it's firing has some sort of like fieriness to it.
Yeah. Like a cyclops type of situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Through the Gryffindor is supported by Pear Eyewear. Y'all, I am so excited for our upcoming Through the Griffin tour. It is going to be such a good time. But as ever, when you're going to be spending time in front of people, you want to be looking your darned best. And let me tell you what, Pear Eyewear has arrived just in the nick of time. Like, honestly, I was immediately blown away with my new frame. So let me walk you through exactly what they do. So starting at just $60, including your prescription, you can get your base frames, which are like sleek, modern, and stylish, but that is really just the start, because from there, you get to fully customize each frame, all of your looks, by simply snapping on the top frames. And they actually have an entire collection of Harry Potter frames. So like for the upcoming tour, I was so pumped. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to find some super cool Slytherin frames that I can like wear. But then as I was clicking around, I've been watching X-Men 97, which is like so good, and they actually had X-Men frames as well. And then May the 4th is coming up, or maybe by the time you're listening it's already passed, but like they have a huge collection of over 20 Star Wars frames as well. So I had a very hard time narrowing, and I ended up getting two. I got the X-Men ones and I got some Slytherin ones. So many different like fandom frames you can choose from. And I never thought to accessorize my glasses with fandom stuff, but now you can, and it's so easy to change between them. Like they have little magnets on them, so you can just slap a different frame onto the front of your glasses and then easily switch it out. I've been doing it all day. It's so fun. And before you commit to anything, you can explore all the different possibilities with their virtual try-on. But again, the base frames for men, women, or kids. I think honestly kids would love this because you can just switch them out and they're so fun looking. They all start at $60. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code GRIFFIN for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that Through the Gryffindor sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code GRIFFIN.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although to be fair, it's not a concern either. But to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership, because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast. But with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So anyway, but the other important detail here, I guess the takeaway is that, well, what do you think about this? Which is the fact that like Hermione went to the, like, I mean, I guess there could be a reason behind it, but like Hermione tearing a page out of a library book seems a little unlike Hermione.
Yeah.
Unless what was happening with Hermione on this particular day was she was kind of like, because she needs to do a lot of planning and forethought with this, because not only does she like not just go to the library to confirm her belief, which yeah. she's able to successfully do, like she could just take this information back to Harry and Ron and just be like, okay, I went to the library. I'm correct. It's a basilisk.
Yeah.
Like, but like, no, she goes to the effort of tearing it out and including like the detail on the back of it where right. she's handwritten the word pipes, which is also kind of cryptic. Like for this much forethought, it's sort of like a small amount of information that she's included. Like, especially because if she was like, you know, imagine she shows up and she's just like showing this piece of paper to Harry and Ron. It's just like, I had one more thought. What was it? Oh, I wrote it down. Pipes.
Right.
He's traveling in the pipes.
Yeah.
Like, how does this play out in the world where Hermione doesn't get attacked and she just shows back up?
Right.
Like, instead, it's like is...
Yeah, it, like, would she, like, show them the paper? I guess maybe. Like, just make sure I get all the details. Do you think she ripped it out of the library book?
I mean, does it say? It was a page torn from a very old library book.
No, you're right. Yeah, page torn. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
So she definitely did.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you're right. I don't know. It seems vaguely un-Hermione-like.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering if there's like, does she like magically copy and paste it over or something?
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
But
as well.
No, it does say torn. And that also seems like plagiarism of some sort, or, you know, I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know.
I guess it just depends. Yeah, I mean, just copying really notes from a book, you know, that's yeah. like, I mean, students do that all the time, right?
Yeah, right.
She wasn't presenting it as like a published paper.
Right. Yeah, no. Yeah. This is just like proof. This is what's happening. Absolutely. This is what's happening.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. Why does she write pipes on the page? Just as like a reminder to herself, like, oh, I forgot.
So the other kind of interest, okay, do we know that, I'm just trying to go back in time now in the book as well, because the other detail that we get from here is that spiders flee before the basilisk, but Harry and Ron are specifically without Hermione at Hagrid's hut that night when he gives the advice to follow the spiders. Does Hermione, right. would she have had that additional piece of like information? I'm just trying to remember.
No, she would not.
Okay, so they would
notice the spiders at least.
It's scuttling away.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So there was that. Yeah, I'm trying to think now. If McGonagall doesn't intercept them and they don't get this bit of information, then they probably just end up. What would happen, right? They go. They just make it to Myrtle's bathroom.
They would just make it to Myrtle's bathroom,
right?
Myrtle would just say, "And then I died," and she would say the gleaming yellow eyes,
right?
Which would they wouldn't know what the gleaming yellow eyes could mean. They could think that the heir of Slytherin had yellow eyes,
right? Or they could. I mean, they know. I guess they know there's a monster. They could assume that's the monster. I guess,
right?
And they ask her like where it happened, and she points over at the sink, and like they could presumably search the sink and find the snake,
right?
And they could even assume snake Slytherin. Parselmouth.
Right.
Like, I mean, Harry already knows ahead of time that he can hear it because of the Parselmouth, because of finding this passage.
Right.
But like, maybe they could get this far. But then Harry and Ron probably just like go down by themselves, maybe? Or do they go get somebody? You know?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's because that's the other thing too, is that like even the eventual like blockade that separates Lockhart and Ron from Harry allows it to be just Harry who goes in and not like Ron in there as well. So it's like I could see a world where like Ron is just potentially with Harry. They walk into the Chamber of Secrets, but then Ginny wouldn't have been taken. Ginny would be taken down still.
Yeah, Ginny's has she been taken?
It's actively happening. As the rest of this is unfolding.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Most likely that goes back to the comment from McGonagall at the beginning of the chapter where she announces to the school that the mandrakes, because that is what basically causes.
So maybe if they go straight to Moaning Myrtle, they just like intercept Ginny.
Oh. That's interesting.
That'd be really odd.
If you assume they intercept Ginny, there's a possibility they could. Like, Harry doesn't even have to be the one who speaks parcel tongue because Tom Riddle's able to do it on her behalf, right?
Yeah.
That's how he's basically luring her down there.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. So at that point, yeah, they would just be able to follow Ginny down. They'd find... I don't know if it would make a whole lot of difference for, like, Tom Riddle, who's still already kind of, like translucent-y, like, not fully himself.
Yeah. I mean, maybe... But if they see her, do they, like, snap her out of the trance or something? Does that, like...
Would it work? I have no idea.
Would it work? I don't know. Yeah, or do they just like follow her?
Or could like Tom Riddle, through occupying Ginny, like actively like use her wand to attack them or something?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. That's like a...
this is a big like big what if. I guess, okay. Assuming Ginny's already been taken and they're like just going to go find her though, they would get down there and see the snake skin still.
Yes.
Right. At that point, they're like, okay, it's definitely a snake.
Big snake.
But they don't know about the eyes.
They don't know about... Oh, that's a good point. They wouldn't know about the eyes.
They wouldn't know about the eyes. Yeah.
Which would mean... Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, there is a few... There is, like, a few... There is a little bit where the basilisk shows up and Harry is, like, covering his eyes before Fox gets there and solves that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, maybe they just get...
Maybe Harry gets laser beamed.
Laser beamed. Okay. Okay. Oh, we had to pull on that string a little bit. But I think that there is a possibility that Harry and Ron both die.
That might be the case. Yeah.
And Tom Riddle's like, wow, that was easy.
That was easy.
This snake is so useful.
Really seems like the basilisk should have been able to just take out Harry almost immediately anyway. But
yeah, especially with all that rhetoric about ripping and tearing.
I know.
Unless, right? Of course, it was in reference to the spider webs.
Exactly. Yeah. So many spider webs. So
rip them down.
Rip them down.
Oh, man. Okay. Anyway, but this is where Harry, after reading the note, he's able to sort of like put the pieces of the puzzle together. The one thing I got to say, he's like, okay, yeah. So he references the burned up film inside of Colin's camera. Mm-hmm. Justin must have seen him through Nearly Headless Nick. Hermione was using the mirror to look around the corners. Then Ron is like, and Mrs. Norris, he whispered eagerly. This happens sometimes when we're theory writing where it's like, okay, does it work? Does it work? Does it work? Oh, crap. There's something that we can't explain.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
So much for that one.
Works for 9 out of 10, but that 10th one.
I know. The 10th one is a real problem for us. Now we got to figure out how to explain that one.
Yeah. What is the scenario to, like, why at the Quidditch match are Hermione, Penelope, and Ginny the only people left at the school? You know, like, why isn't Penelope down at the match?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't know either.
Question. Maybe she doesn't like sports, which we don't even, that can't even be true because I'm pretty sure Percy bets her like 10 galleons.
Yeah, something like that.
On Gryffindor.
Yeah, beating Ravenclaw.
Yeah. Next year against Percy. So anyway, I don't think that could be the case. But the thing I was going to say next is that Ron's like, Mrs. Norris, and Harry like goes, he must have like a really amazing memory for specific things. Like maybe he was built to be an Auror because he is remembering back to the night of Halloween. And keep in mind, this is like June 1st.
Yeah.
You know, so this is what, 8 months prior to like a scene of a crime, very stressful type situation. And he's like, the water was on the floor. Remember that? There was water on the floor.
Yeah.
And it's like, Harry, well done, man.
Dude,
like,
you got it.
Very impressive. I'm just like, that seems like a lot to keep in mind after all this time.
Yeah.
So he finds the explanation. Then they go through the rooster and the
the spiders.
Yeah.
And then Ron's like, a giant snake. Someone would have seen it. I just highlighted that. I was like, yep. Honestly, the fact that you figured out the pipes doesn't explain why nobody's seen it. Because it's not like it's attacking people from the pipes. Like, it's still emerging to do the attacks.
Right, right.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. It does seem like it must be like a rather shy creature.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I just sort of like swiggle through the hallways and it's like,
how many people are out there?
Are you a ghost?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, no, it seems like you're right, though. I mean, it feels very like Scooby-Doo, where it's kind of like you can always find the evidence, but like somehow they've miraculously like gotten away before. Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, so starting to figure out that the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets is in the bathroom, which again, going back to last week's episode, I think I was just for the first time in my entire life after reading this book so many times, realizing like chamber pots, Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Entrance to the Chamber of Secrets is in like a chamber room.
Bam.
Yeah. How about that?
Hilarious.
I don't know why I find it clever, but it's like, I'm like, all right, that's not so bad.
It's pretty good.
Let's see here. The other thing that I think is also kind of interesting that like I've kind of forgotten about as a reader is like Harry says, this means I can't be the only parcel mouth in the school. The heir of Slytherin's 1-2. And it's like, technically that's correct, but it is still like interesting in my head how it's like Harry still thinks that like one of the other students or faculty members or someone is the heir of Slytherin.
Yeah, yeah. And there's actually the next sentence says, that's how he's been controlling the basilisk, which is just another little like tiny misdirect right here at the end that it's like a male and not Ginny.
Oh, yep. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yep.
So anyway, for once in their lives, Ron's like, what are we going to do? Should we go straight to McGonagall? And Harry's like, yes, let's go to the staff room.
Yeah.
She'll be there in 10 minutes. It's nearly break. So, it's like, okay, they're doing the thing. They're going to consult the adults. But then they run downstairs and they go to the staff room when there is McGonagall like using the magically magnified voice, which is the Sonorous. Is that
the name of Sonorous, that? Right? Yeah. That like Ludo Bagman uses at the Quidditch World Cup.
Yeah. I was like, that's kind of cool that like, McGonagall's using it. But basically she's making an announcement. So something has happened, which like this one may be a little bit less coincidental that something happens again, kind of going back to your point from earlier that like, you know, like McGonagall's announced it. So like today's the day that the perpetrator is like, okay, if you're going to figure me out tomorrow, like I got to start acting, you know, I gotta get my plan and fast forward all of a sudden.
Yeah. Things got to happen.
Right. So the thing that I find to be kind of interesting is that they get to the staff room and they're intending to tell teachers and the teachers are about to go to the staff room where they were hoping to talk to them. And for whatever reason, now inside of the situation with this new information, Harry's like, okay, how about instead of telling the teachers, we listen in on the conversation instead?
Right.
It's like, literally, they were like, let's go to the staff room to tell a teacher. And McGonagall's just like, all teachers to the staff room. And they're like, hey, let's change plans.
Right.
It's like, why change plans? Instead, you're just going to have all of the teachers there to tell instead of just McGonagall.
I know. Like, I don't understand. How do they escape this situation without telling anybody?
Yeah.
You know? Like, that seems like it would have been the thing to do. Instead, they hide in the wardrobe in the staff room, which coincidentally is the same wardrobe the Boggart's hiding in next book.
Oh, yes. Yeah. There you go.
Fun fact. In here. Let's hear what it's all about. Then we can tell them what we found out. Like,
yeah. What are you going to do? Just like pop out of the thing and be like, hey, we were listening.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not going to go well.
You're going to just be like, oh, my gosh. Well, there's been another attack. Great news. We know exactly what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But so the one thing I do like about this particular situation, though, is McGonagall walks in. She got the rest of the teachers there right away. She says, it's happened. A student is taken by the monster right into the chamber itself. I like this moment because it's a candid Snape moment.
Yes. Where
he doesn't know that Harry and Ron are listening.
Yes.
And what it describes it as is Snape gripped the back of the chair very hard and said, how can you be sure?
Yes.
It's like, okay, Snape is like concerned.
Right.
You know, like to me that shows like, you know, maybe on some level, like when he's around Harry, he can't help himself. Like he needs to be contrary to Harry. And because Harry is good, Snape is always going to come across as like greasy and stuff. And it's like, but in this particular instance, like surrounded by the rest of the teachers, like whatever,
right.
It's like he's just
regular Snape.
He's just regular Snape.
Right. And he is like, he is concerned.
Yes, he is concerned.
Yes. Which, I do like that line, especially. Yeah, it is a very rare candid Snape moment.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But what McGonagall says, the heir of Slytherin left another message right underneath the first one. Her skeleton will lie in the chamber forever.
Oh, this is the other thing. This is as bad as McGonagall announcing that we're going to have the Mandrake potion. Why is the heir of Slytherin like, hey, guess what? Just to get FYI, I got another message for you real quick. Like, just in case you wanted to know, you got like 8 hours to stop me or whatever, you know, it's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, dude, just don't put the message on the wall. Right. Like, just finish your plan first. Come all the way back to life.
It's the vanity.
No reason to write this on the wall and tip your hand at all.
This is like the serial killer leaving like the calling card thing. It's like, you just can't help yourself. It's going to be unraveling.
I know. Like, wait, just like what? Because, you know, like wait until you're done and then come write the message.
Yeah. Right. You know? Right.
Like,
yeah,
now
yeah.
It's true. Her skeleton's already, it's already rotting.
Right.
You know, Hart took care of it.
Rotting. Well, skeletons don't rot, but you know.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
what you mean.
It's already lying in the chamber forever. Sorry, not rot.
No, that's okay.
Also, how do they know it's Ginny Weasley? How do they know?
I know. Yeah, they figured that out.
They've quickly deduced it. They certainly don't know where Harry and Ron are.
Right. Yeah.
I guess it says her, but still. Yeah,
it's a good point. It's a good point. But yeah, so you kind of get like a soft and tender moment from just about all the teachers who are definitely having like a difficult time, you know, and basically like, you know, describing McGonagall says this is the end of Hogwarts, Dumbledore always said. And then the staff room door banged open for one wild moment. Harry was sure it would be Dumbledore, but it was Lockhart. And he was beaming.
I know. I just highlighted that. I was like, goodness.
Come on, man.
Dude, read the room.
Read the room.
Never so does.
Sorry, dozed off. What have I missed?
Yeah, dozed off.
I like the description of what the other teachers look like here, which is they looked at him with something remarkably like hatred. So remarkably that it might just be hatred.
It might just be hatred. It's like, if I didn't know any better, I think they hate the man.
Yeah, yes, indeed. But it's kind of funny because, like, this is a moment where, like, all four heads of house are sort of like, okay, we have had enough. This is a stressful situation. We are all really spooked right now. Someone is possibly dead, and you are such a moron.
Yeah.
Like, and so I love the fact that they shift from, like, being in, like, a state of mourning to being, like they all have, like, a secret conversation in their head. They're like, maybe we can get him to go try.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get him out of here so the grown-ups can keep talking.
Right. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's exactly. It. So basically they're like, you know, Lockhart, weren't you just saying that you knew where the entrance to the chamber was all along and you knew what was inside? Did I? I don't recall.
I certainly remember you saying you were sorry you hadn't had a crack at the monster before Hagrid was arrested. Yes. Says Snell. It's another Snape just being like, oh yeah, oh I'll join in on this. I'll
yeah, be on. Absolutely. Yeah. me and my buddies over here, you know, yeah. Like we're coming after you.
Exactly.
Yep.
And it does, on that note, it does feel like basically at this moment, McGonagall should also be sending like a letter to Azkaban being like, FYI, there was another attack. Wasn't Hagrid.
Let him out. Yep. Let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah. So this, what's funny about this though, is that, this is like another one of those instances that I think like what Harry and Ron's reaction later is kind of interesting is because Harry and Ron are in there. They're watching all of this unfold. They successfully get him to leave the room. It says, very well, I'll be in my office getting ready. And he left the room. Right, said Professor McGonagall, whose nostrils were flared. That's got him out from under our feet. And so it's like, it is very clear that like if you're Harry and Ron watching this scene unfold, that they're like, Lockhart's not going to do anything. We just need to get him out of our way.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like in the next several pages, basically they're up in the Gryffindor common room and like, they're all just sort of in this like very subdued state and everybody's sad and everybody's really worried. And at some point in time, Harry and Ron are like, you know, we should probably go talk to Lockhart, give him all the information we have just in case it helps. And it's like, why all of a sudden do you care? Or do you think that Lockhart is actually going to be useful?
Yeah, I know. Like, what do you, yeah, like, they, like, why do you think he's actually going to go try and do it?
Right.
Like, you pretty much thought he was a fraud. It's like, still, why aren't you going to tell McGonagall, of all people?
I know, yeah. So, yeah. So they hang out in the wardrobe. They listen in. They get all this information. And then they don't exit the wardrobe and tell any of the teachers, like, the rest of the information that they know. Which, especially once they discover that, like, it's Ginny, it's like, okay, now, like, all heroics aside, all everything else aside, like, it's like, just go and communicate to the people in charge what's going on.
Right.
But I mean, that's always sort of like the thing with Harry Potter. I said it's sort of like if they had the help from adults, they wouldn't have to do it on their own. If they didn't have to do it on their own, it wouldn't be a story.
Exactly. So
there's that.
There is that. So anyway, I guess they make their way back up to the common room where Harry, Ron, and Fred and George sit in the corner without Percy. Because he's gone to, I guess, write a letter to Mr. and Mrs. Weasley. Shut himself up. That's another little like, uh-oh, is it Percy? Percy's not there. What's he doing? Situation.
Yep. I still stand by the belief that like as much as I am aware of the fact that Percy is supposed to be like suspicious and there are clearly instances of it, it's like I can't even bring it in me to suspect him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's not Percy.
It's like, it just wasn't Percy. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Then Ron starts to realize that like what Ginny was going to tell them wasn't about Percy, that that's not why she was taken. It was some stupid thing. It wasn't some stupid thing about Percy at all. And it's like, actually, she knows both, which is kind of funny.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But then he quickly points out like she was a pureblood. There can't be any other reason. It's like, that is a good point. No one seems to be concerned that it was a pureblood who was taken.
That's true.
Yeah.
It does seem to go against everything that would sort of be like, I mean, enemies of the air, beware.
Right.
You'll be next mudbloods.
Right.
All that. Well, I guess it's just Draco that says that.
Yeah. Just otherwise, the message is just enemies. The Chamber of Secrets has been opened again. Enemies of the air, beware.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Are the Weasleys such obvious blood traitors already?
I suppose they could be, but yeah. I don't know. But yeah, so basically then, yeah, Ron's like, we need to go talk to Lockhart, tell him what we know. He's going to try to get in the chamber. We can tell him what we think it is and tell him it's a basilisk down there. It's like, this is a real question. It's like, is it just desperation?
Maybe. I think it's just like, it's better to be doing something than nothing.
Right.
Yeah. But also they got up, crossed the room and left through the portrait hole. Like, unprotected. Like, yeah, there's not a teacher in the common room.
Right, yeah.
There's not, like, someone sitting outside the common room.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it definitely, I mean, if any of there was a time for a prefect to be on duty, it seems like just standing in front of the portrait hole being like, sorry, you can't leave.
No, you can't leave, yeah.
It's not
safe. Absolutely not.
But they're able to just, it doesn't even say they use the invisibility cloak. They just walk, they just
walk right down.
Office. Yeah.
Yep.
Which maybe this is the real reason there's always so much danger. It's like, as much protection as is supposed to be there, it's just...
Yeah, they're not doing a good job of it.
Yeah, not so much. Not so much. That's okay, though. So they go to Lockhart's office. They knock on the door. You're starting to see that Lockhart is just in a full state of panic. He is shoving all of his various colored robes, including jade green, lilac, midnight blue, into his trunks. There's a moment here where they're in the room with him, and all the photographs that had covered the walls were now crammed into boxes on the desk. Harry asks, are you going somewhere? Lockhart responds, yes, ripping a life-size poster of himself from the back of the door as he spoke. And I was like, I literally just wrote LOL, a poster?
Yeah.
Like what is this, like a dorm room?
Yeah, basically.
You know, like posters, I mean, nothing wrong with posters.
But it's unframed. He immediately rolls it up.
I know, yeah. It just seems like such an odd thing for him. I mean, all of Lockhart's vanity is overwhelming and obvious and all the rest, but I don't know why this one stuck out to me. I was like, a poster.
You know what also stands out to me, though, which is kind of like in character, is that he is not packing by magic. He's like manually having to pack everything.
Yes.
Which, for an adult wizard should not be a problem. It should just be like, wave wand, go. But of course, Lockhart can only do like one spell, so he does still have to pack manually.
Yes, no, it's a good point. It's a good point. But this is another one of those where I actually frequently think everyone kind of does this with the Defense Against the Dark Arts position. But Lockhart's basically just saying, like, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to help. And Harry responds with, you're the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Yeah.
And like, this is one of those where I think in Deathly Hallows, is it Deathly Hallows? No, or is it Half-Blood Prince? There's a moment like where McGonagall herself refers to Snape and saying like, he was the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. And it's like they put like a lot of stock into that.
Right, as like if your personality is your position.
Yes, exactly. As if like, it's like by being that teacher, you must be prepared for everything. It's like, they're all just teachers, you know? It's not like he's the general in the army.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Of course he should be there. It's like, he's a teacher.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, it's like I think it's just interesting that they put so much emphasis on that as if that carries this much additional responsibility, to which Lockhart's response is sort of like, there was nothing in the job description. I mean, I didn't expect this. And it's like I honestly think it's like fighting a massive ancient beast underneath the castle probably wouldn't be in the job description.
Yeah, probably not.
For this particular thing.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, even like, you know, even if it was Lupin, like, it doesn't seem like it would necessarily be his responsibility to go do this.
No.
Yeah, right.
Most certainly not. But then, of course, basically Lockhart just becomes very candid with the boys right away. Like, I literally wrote down, like, you know, he pretty much starts like monologuing.
Oh, I know. Bit. Yeah, like, he comes clean really quickly.
Yes. So he's basically just saying, like, my books wouldn't have sold half as well if people didn't think I'd done those things.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny too, though, like, what Lockhart really thinks that he brings to the table, or like, he's so convinced that his like good looks and charming smile and stuff like that is like what makes the stories so phenomenal, because like he starts talking about like the actual people who like did these things. He's like, nobody wants to read about some ugly old Armenian warlock, even if he did save a village from werewolves. It's like,
right.
I don't think that people are really that tied into the appearance of the hero,
right,
when it comes to a genuine act of heroism.
Yeah, like the story is interesting regardless, but like, he's like, recognize that if the same good-looking hero was the hero of all of these crazy tales, then he's like truly elevated.
Yes.
But yeah, still just like, yeah, what? But yeah, he does very quickly. I love how he's like, books can be misleading, and Harry's like, you wrote them.
I wrote touche.
Yeah. So misleading. Good. Oh, man. Oh, but I guess he's only coming clean so quickly because he's quickly, he's also planning to just wipe their memories just immediately.
Yes.
Yeah, I also love how he still tries to defend, like, his fame. He says, no, if there's one thing I pride myself on at this moment, no, it's been a lot of hard work here. It's not all book signings, it's publicity photos, you know. You want fame, you have to be prepared for a long, hard slog. Just like, look at all the work I did getting famous, stealing and cheating. Like, come on, give me some credit.
Do you think at all, like, that's the thing, is that, like, out of everything he hasn't done, it's like, this is something he has done, and right. It almost like drives him crazy, like that nobody ever actually hears the hard work he has committed, which like this is like one of those things where it's like I can imagine that everything that Lockhart does has done has not exactly like it's like he's cheating in a sense, but he had to work really hard in order to successfully pull off the cheat,
right?
But then nobody ever gets to know about everything that he did to do it, but he is someone who really wants credit,
right?
So it's like, I'm going to tell you so that you can be impressed by all of my, like, you know, devious nature or
it's,
whatever.
It's a classic story of like, if you put in half as much effort into just doing the work as you do to avoiding the work, you'd be amazing.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Like just do the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's so preoccupied with what he thinks fame is. But anyway, I that was my curiosity. It was like, because he's coming clean and it makes him look so bad. But like maybe he wants someone to know everything he did.
Right.
Because he can also then just erase their memories and then they won't know. But he gets to feel.
Yeah.
Like he gets to like
he's got
experience.
Like that release valve.
Right. Yeah. He gets the brag. Ugh, yeah.
Someone knows. But then Harry has a great moment here where, because like, the entire time Lockhart's telling them this, he's planning on just like wiping their memories, and he's right. Like, you know, he is planning it out in his head ahead of time. He has premeditated what he is going to do, and despite that, Harry beats him to his wand and disarms him.
Yes,
with Expelliarmus, which is just like Harry is good.
Harry is good. You know? Yeah, I think this is something that's underemphasized throughout the whole saga, is that like Harry has genuine skill,
yeah,
and talent in this particular arena. Is this the first time he's using Expelliarmus?
I think it is, yeah, because they teach it to him in the dueling club, or Snape does, and then like him and Draco have their duel, but like they quickly don't follow the rules and just start attacking each other,
right,
with tickle fights and stuff.
Yeah, yes, indeed. as two bros do.
I think maybe it is, yeah, this is the first time he uses it on somebody.
Yeah, so what I like about this though is that I actually talked about this back in an earlier chapter in Lockhart's first lesson with the Cornish pixies, but Ron catches the wand and flings it out the window, and this is exactly what the Cornish pixies did when he tried to cast a spell on them, was they took his wand and threw it out the same window. It's like, that's so funny. It's like, what a throwback.
Yeah,
his wand is just always being thrown out the window. But that's also a nice setup as well, like talking about like weaving the story into like the fabric. It's like the setup for Lockhart to have to use someone else's wand, it's like you have like an entire section of the story where it's like, we're going to do a dueling club, we're going to do disarming. Like, you need to have a way for Lockhart to be in possession of the backfiring wand when the moment comes.
Right.
But like the dueling club doesn't feel like a reach. Like, that just feels like a completely reasonable thing for the school to do. It's like a self-defense class.
Right. Yeah.
Just in case. Yep. So I like that. That works out pretty well. At this point in time, Lockhart is basically just like, he's got nothing on him. It's like he has literally been taken captive by 2 12-year-olds.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, they have wands, he doesn't. They've disarmed him. And he's like, he starts making what feels like reasonable. I mean, he's been bragging that he knows where it is, but he's like, what do you want me to do? Like, I don't know where it is. There's nothing I can do.
I wrote next to that. I was just like, well, at least he's honest.
Yeah.
Now.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, but unfortunately for him, Harry does know where it is, sort of, and what's inside of it. So they go to visit Moaning Myrtle and ask how she died, and she looked as though she'd never been asked such a flattering question, because she hasn't.
Because she hasn't.
Yeah.
Oh, it was dreadful, she said with some relish.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happened right in here. I died in this very stall. I remember it so well. I'd hidden because Olive Hornby was teasing me about my glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Olive Hornby. I highlighted it because I can never remember it for some reason.
Olive Hornby. Olive Hornby. Glossies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that even though it is the Basilisk and Tom Riddle that murder her, she sticks around to haunt Olive Hornby.
I know. You know?
I was like, she's not even the one, man. Like,
right. Yep.
The pettiness on Myrtle, sky high.
I know. I guess that's the big thing, though, is you needed a reason for her to come back as a ghost.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's like one of those where it's like, man, how much was Olive Hornby bullying her?
Oh, I know. She sounds terrible.
Like, I'm going to commit the rest of my foreverness to existing in the name of bothering you for the rest of your school time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
right.
That's tough.
I know. But so while she's in there being bullied, she remembers that someone came in, a boy, and he spoke a different language. And then I died. Yeah. I just remember seeing a pair of great big yellow eyes. My body sort of seized up and then I was floating away. So she doesn't mention the obvious heat that penetrated her body.
Yeah. Due to the laser vision.
But there's an interesting, this is interesting because she says she died, but then later when Harry talks to the nearly headless Nick after Sirius dies, he's like, I have never truly died. So like, you know, she says she died and obviously she doesn't have a regular body, but she doesn't truly die the way that like Sirius dies.
You know what's kind of interesting is that she may have like witnessed whatever has to be done in order to create a Horcrux then.
Oh, you're right. That is true because like her death is what makes the diary Horcrux.
Yeah, this is one that always confuses me a little bit. I'm sure we've touched on it before, but it must mean that it is not absolutely required for you to be the person to Tom Riddle was commanding the snake, so it's like death by proxy, which I guess is like what Voldemort does to Snape with Nagini. You know, in the Shrieking Shack, like fast forwarding to Deathly Hallows. So I suppose there's like something to that being a case, like there's like some magic behind like being the one to
have directed it. Yeah, like that. Yeah. You, that murder is yours.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
Right.
Because otherwise, it seems like the kill should go to the Basilisk.
The Basilisk. Yeah.
But
seems like it.
But additionally, yeah, to your point, it's like that. It's kind of fascinating because it's like, I mean, Nearly Headless Nick describes it as if he's never truly died, or maybe he doesn't know what it feels like to fully experience the complete sensation of death.
Right.
Maybe is a better way to describe it because you never just go like, you know, air quotes on. But I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. This is the only person who dies at the hand of Voldemort that comes back as a ghost, right?
Yeah. And what's crazy is, does she, like, he must not have been planning to like go in there and kill her. Like, you know, like he's just going in there to open it and like she walks out of the stall and he's like, well.
I know, yeah, like this has worked out well. I've just checked out Magic Most Evil from the library and now I want to test out my new skills.
Yeah. So this is the other thing we were trying to figure out is the diary the first Horcrux?
Yeah, I know. This is a weird timeline situation because there's a couple of glimpses that we get into Tom Riddle. We know that when he opens the Chamber of Secrets, he's a fifth year. And we know that whenever he's in Slughorn's memory, he's already got the ring. And I suspect that since the ring would have existed so closely to the actual Riddle household, because they're like right there in like the same town of Little...
Yeah.
Is it Little Hangleton? Yeah, Little Hangleton. Because they're both right there, I suspect that he killed his father and family the same day that he collected the ring and made the Horcrux all at once.
Well, because he frames Morphin for the murder of the Riddles.
I genuinely think... Okay, I'm starting to put like a plot together that makes sense in my head. I think... he would have learned, because we've always struggled with why he uses the diary. It's never totally made sense, especially since it's bought from a Muggle shop. It seems so unimportant by comparison to like Hogwarts founders artifacts that all have like magical you know, capabilities on in their own right. But I'm starting to think, if he is coming up from the Chamber of Secrets, which he must have been doing because he has the basilisk with him, that his running into Myrtle is completely accidental. And I think he's just seizing the moment. I think that, like, and chances are, you know, if he has a diary on him, not for largely nefarious reasons, just because it's a small object he could have had on his person in that moment, it may have just been like a like any old port in a storm situation where it's like, I need an object to turn into a...
But I guess I always get the feeling that he was actually actively writing in the diary for the entire year. And that, like, that's like how he recorded the memories in it and stuff.
I mean, I think that is still entirely possible. Like,
okay.
He could have been doing some manner of that. Or maybe that's like what makes it twice as powerful. Or maybe once he stored his soul in it, he then wrote his whole story inside of it.
Yeah, because like when Harry goes in, it like flips to a certain page.
Right.
You know, which I like the way I've always interpreted that was that like this was the page that originally had the writing about what I did.
Okay. Yeah. I follow what you mean. So I mean that's possible. I just think, I don't know, it seems so... This is like where I've always been caught with the diary in terms of whether or not it was planned to be a Horcrux from the beginning, which like, I feel like I'm coming to terms with a little bit more, especially because like Harry doesn't throw the diary away because like for some reason it's got this like magnetism to him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like that sort of tracks to me. I can sort of understand like what's going on with that. But like the diary seems like an odd choice. The death of Myrtle seems like an unimportant death. The basilisk is the one that kills her. It's like there's so many things about it that don't seem to fit the equation that we know is applied to every other Horcrux.
Yeah.
You know, even the fact that like he's preserving his final Horcrux for like the death of Harry Potter, which would basically all but like seal his permanence, his you know, fixture status, you know, in immortality and leading and ruling over the wizarding populace, if not you know, the world. Like none of the rest of it's, I don't know, I sort of don't hate a situation where it's just he runs into her, it's the first moment he's ever had to actually kill somebody and he does.
But that's if it's happened, if that's happening before he gets the ring.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So it's, I mean, I guess that's what you're coming down to is like, how much status could he have to be so ingratiated into Slughorn's inner circle as like a fifth year, which I mean, I guess Ginny's invited.
Yeah.
You know, as a fifth year to the Slughorn.
Because
meetings.
Then there's also like what he's asking Slughorn, which is what happens if you make more than one Horcrux.
He's definitely not asking. Yeah. He's asking to get to the quantity of seven. Like, wouldn't seven be the magic, like most powerful magical number or whatever?
Right. But so like, but he already has the ring, and presumably the ring he's wearing is presumably already a Horcrux, right?
Yes, definitely.
Right. So it seems like it, like the case could even be like he has the ring, then he asks Slughorn, like, what happens if I make more than one? Then he kills Myrtle.
I follow what you're saying, because otherwise he would have two at that point in time, by the time he asked Slughorn.
Yeah, because otherwise, why would you need to ask, like, if you could make more than one?
Well, but that's the thing. It's like, maybe he knows he can make more than one. He's just trying to determine whether or not seven would be the most powerful.
I guess that's true, too. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, we might. I feel like I've always thought the diary was the first Horcrux, and now I'm like, was it?
I know. Maybe this is just like a whole, like, it just needs to be like a deep dive in and of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But we're not going to figure it out without the ability to do more research.
Yeah. No, we're not just going to reason it out here. Yeah. I don't think so. Yep. Anyway, moving on. Let's see. Myrtle says she came back to haunt Olive Hornby, not Tom Riddle. Okay. And she says, that the attack came from somewhere over there, pointing in front of the sinks. And then they're looking at it. And this is sort of a weird one. She says, "That taps never work," said Myrtle brightly as she tried to turn it, which is like, to me, that's already a little bit sus. Like, magic should be able to fix things like sinks. You know, like what, like the entire, like for the last 50 years, the sink hasn't worked and you guys haven't been able to magically fix it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like one of those where it's like maybe they even like cast a spell at it. Cause like, you know, if you were fixing a broken pipe, you could use Reparo to fix the broken pipe. But if the pipe isn't hooked up to any water supply at all, you could repair it and it still wouldn't have water.
Right.
You know, like repairing it would almost be like rerouting it. But this is another one of those things where it's like I think there's additional writing on Pottermore because one of the big issues is like plumbing, indoor plumbing especially, didn't exist when Salazar Slytherin did. And so this is something that had to be sort of like backfilled with additional narrative,
yeah.
Which is that a different descendant of the Gaunts, I think in the 1870s,
yeah.
Actually went in and installed the plumbing and like reconfigured the location.
Yeah.
To the Chamber of Secrets, which is kind of another one of those things where I think like Tom Riddle's vanity is his belief that he was the only one other than Harry to discover the Chamber of Secrets, which is right. Just not true. But Riddle also believes he's the only one to have found
the Room of Requirement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it's just overflowing with stuff.
Yeah. Right. Like clearly other people are here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, anyway, they find the tiny snake on the side of the sink, and Harry realizes that he's got to talk to it. Is it Ron that says, yeah, Harry said, Ron, say something in Parseltongue. So good call by Ron.
Yep, yep.
To figure out how to open it. And they decide, like, Harry and Ron gasped, made up his mind what he's going to do. I'm going down there, which I just love that Harry's just like, yep, we're going. That's it.
Through the trapdoor.
Full send.
Yep.
Through the trapdoor. It's the exact same moment from after Fluffy's asleep. Like, yep, we're going through.
Right, right. But they do make Lockhart go first.
Yeah.
Into the slimy, dark slide, which does sound horrifying.
Does sound terrible.
You know, this is the type of thing where it's like Tom Riddle must have been good at like whatever, like, you know, cloak cleaning magic.
Yeah.
Because I can't see a world where he's like walking around the castle in like a totally goopy, slimy interior type thing. Otherwise it sounds kind of fun. But then once they travel down through the slide, I think Harry says, we must be miles under the school.
Oh yeah.
To which I just wrote, that would be so far.
Oh, I know. Like, I was like, miles?
Miles?
Miles.
Yes. It's like
plural.
You know, for reference, like the Empire State Building is nowhere near miles tall.
Right.
You know, and it's like,
yeah.
And that is a remarkably tall building if you were to imagine flipping it upside down and going beneath the school and then multiplying it by like, I don't know, 27 times.
Yeah.
You know, like if not more, you know, I mean, it's 1 mile is 5,280 feet. Miles would suggest more than one of them.
Right, yeah. 10,000 at least, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's just a figure of speech. And then Ron says they're probably under the lake, so this is interesting to me because it's kind of what you said, because he's probably right. I think they're under the lake, which is all great. But it like there's like he has to do the thing with the sink where he talks to the snake to make the chamber open.
Right.
But then there's a second door later where he has to do the same thing.
Right.
Right? Like, why is it twice? Right? Why? It's like, you know, it'd be like if you have to, like, punch in a keypo to get through a door and you walk through it and it's like, hold on, there's a second door. There's another key code? Yeah, it's the same as before. Okay. Open it. Go through the door. It's like, why do you have to unlock the door twice? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I wonder if the second door, because that one seems more ornate. That one's got the snake with the emerald eyes.
Yeah.
So like, I wonder if that was the one that Salazar Slytherin, you know, back in the year, you know, like 990 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that was his door.
Yes. That was the original door is what my theory is.
And I would say that the other door in Myrtle's bathroom is the one that's like added.
Added. Right. Exactly. But if that was the original door, then he must have had access to it from somewhere. You think he, because like they wouldn't have had the bathrooms then. So how was he getting to the door?
That's the question. We've always said that we think the headmaster's office was Godric Gryffindor's former like quarters.
Yeah.
Because it's got like the Griffin knocker on the door, meaning it's a Griffin door.
Right.
And that is obviously turned into like school use type thing. I think, have we suggested the possibility that like the room of requirement was possibly like Rowena's because it like takes like cleverness in order to like access. And then the kitchens, sort of like we know that like Hufflepuff's key contribution was in part doing the kitchens and was very good with like food related spells.
Yep.
So the question is like whether or not like what becomes the girls' bathroom that Myrtle resides, like, is it possibly like formerly what Salazar Slytherin's quarters were, and the other three founders were like, let's turn it into a bathroom.
Yeah.
That'll show him.
That'll show him.
His chamber of secrets he was always going on about. Mm-hmm, I got a sweet pun for you.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. Here's what my thought is that Ron thinks they're under the lake, and the Slytherin common room is like, you can like look out into the lake.
Right. Yeah. It's like green tinted. Yeah.
Right. So it like, it stands to reason to me that there was a way for him to access the original door to the Chamber of Secrets from the Slytherin common room.
Oh, you think so?
I think so.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
Which then like, it doesn't really matter because you probably had to use the same thing like Parselmouth or whatever.
Right.
To get to it. But then there haven't been any other students who did it. And by the time like Voldemort gets there, he just uses the one in the bathroom.
Okay.
How would he have found it the first time?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. He's just like, yeah, that doesn't make a ton of sense to me, I guess.
Unless he got the ring first.
Because he doesn't get the locket until later.
We've always theorized that the what is inside of the locket, because Slytherin's locket becomes a Horcrux and is therefore an important magical artifact in the realm of like Voldemort and Tom Riddle. But obviously the locket existed for a very long time before that. And so usually what we would say is like, a locket is usually meant to contain something, typically like an image of, you know, like a loved one or something like that. But our thought forever has been the only way to open the locket, as we know from Harry, who opens it in order for Ron to destroy it, is by speaking to it using Parselmouth or Parseltongue. And so if Slytherin wanted to ensure that the only people who could find the Chamber of Secrets are his descendants, because they are the only ones who can speak Parseltongue, then if the only way to open the locket is by doing it, then inside of the locket is instructions on how to find the Chamber of Secrets.
Exactly. Which even, you know what, even though he doesn't get the locket, he does talk to his uncle, Morphin Gaunt, who is a previous owner of the locket. And the Gaunt family is the one who like added the plumbing to the chamber and stuff.
So that was what I was going to say. So if he's already got the ring, then he's already gone to see the Gaunts.
Exactly.
Which would mean he might know how to find the chamber.
Yeah, he could have like read their mind or figured or like learned about the Chamber of Secrets from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That tracks.
Okay. All right. And that's why he would find the bathroom entrance and not the common room entrance.
Well, so if all that explanation exists, then the video we will inevitably make about the order in which Voldemort made his Horcruxes will almost certainly suggest that the ring came first.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
That's where I'm starting to lean. It's also that makes sense to me.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? All right. Anyway, we're going on a bunch of tangents on this one.
That's okay. I mean, you know, sometimes we got to do that.
We got, you know, there's a lot of questions about the chamber.
There are a lot of questions. It's a rather secretive place.
Yeah, no doubt. Secrets, plural? I don't know. But, you know.
Chamber of Secret.
The Secret Chamber.
The Secret Chamber.
Slytherin's Secret Chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chamber of Secret. Giant snake. Anyway, I love that even though they're down here and Lockhart is like sort of committed, he is still in no way here for it. Like he's like, even the fact that they found the chamber, he's like, nope, not here. Don't care about these boys at all. He is still scheming. He goes as far as to fake fainting so that he can steal Ron's wand and try and like turn the situation around.
Yes. Yep. I love the fact that like once he's stolen his wand, his gleaming smile is back on his face. It's like they sort of talk about like Lockhart's appearance even earlier in this chapter. It's like he like doesn't like look as handsome after he's been like torn down a couple notches.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's funny to me that it's like the moment his confidence comes back, he's like, so does my persona. I get to be me again.
Exactly. But it's not, doesn't matter because he has I'm impressed by how quickly he comes up with the plan, because it's like, you know, he's like, it must be what he's thinking about while they're going down the 2 mile long slide. Like, oh man, we have found it. This is definitely the chamber. What am I going to do?
Right.
Then he sees the snake skin and he's like, booyah, here we go. Get the snake skin. We found the chamber. Couldn't save the girl. They lost their minds. I'm back on top. And I actually was down here with proof this time.
What was his game plan though? To wipe their memories? And then does he say, let's see here. You two tragically lost your minds at the sight of the Mangle. Okay, okay. So he doesn't intend for Harry and Ron to not be able to come back. He just doesn't intend for them to be able to tell them anything because they will have lost their minds at the exactly. sight of the mangled body.
Yes.
Okay, okay, okay. Because that's like one of those things where I'm like, does he want Ron and Harry to die down there? Like, you're just going to like let them slowly starve because right. they can't remember why they were there or how to get out?
Right.
But no, okay, I follow. But yeah, so then he raises the wand over his head, yells, "Obliviate!" Which is kind of like one of those funny terms for a spell where like when he does it in this particular instance, it's like, yeah, definitely. Like it seems like a very like obliviate sounds like exactly what it sounds like to obliviate something,
right.
to destroy it. Like, but then going forward, we keep the memory spell as obliviate,
right.
which at certain times feels like more intense for other applications.
Right.
You know, like then you have like in Fantastic Beasts, like obliviators,
right.
whose job it is to just like gently wipe people's memories in case they've been exposed to magic.
Right.
It seems much more like a tidying type of thing and less of like a like obliviate.
Right. Yeah. Like destroy them. But I guess he's really trying to like he's trying to like land Harry and Ron in the state that he ends up in.
Yes.
You yeah. know. So he's like he's not just trying for like recent memory wipe. He's like gone. That's right. it for you two.
So maybe that's how you scale a memory charm.
Is just yell
the,
it.
The amount of yeah vocal cords you're engaging.
Exactly.
But yeah. So anyway, the backfiring spell causes the rocks to separate rather conveniently. Ron and Lockhart from Harry, who is yep. now going to be stranded. On the next page, though, you can hear from like the other room where Harry is perceiving a dull thud and a loud ow. It sounded as though Ron had just kicked Lockhart in the shins. And I was like, rather specific.
Where'd you kick him?
That was a shin kick if I've ever heard one.
If ever. Ow. Right. Oh, yeah, that was right in the shins.
Definitely not in the ribs. Absolutely in the shins.
Yep. And then they're like, they're wasting time. Ginny had already been in the Chamber of Secrets for hours. It is like, it is interesting how well this times out because again, it's like, you know, the loading bar on, you know, Ginny becoming fully dead and Tom Riddle coming fully back is basically like 90% now, you know, if they waited like another half hour, it's like, well, that would have been it.
That would have been it. Yeah.
Yeah. Too bad.
I know. Yeah. So they're awfully close. They've acted in just the right amount of time.
Just the right amount of time. Wouldn't you know it?
Yep. Yep. I yep. like that Harry is able to offer, wait with Lockhart. I'll go on. If I'm not back in an hour, you know, and Ron sort of like picks it up and it's like, I'm going to try to shift some of this rock. You know, it's like I sort of like the little bit of like bravery that Ron's got for him there. Like we're going to work on something. We got a plan. We're going to do something. But yeah, so Harry says, see you in a bit. And he sets off past the giant snakeskin. And soon the distant noise of the rocks was gone. They turned and turned again. Every nerve in Harry's body was tingling unpleasantly. He wanted the tunnel to end, yet dreaded what he'd find when it did. And then at last, he crept around yet another bend. He saw a solid wall head on, which two entwined serpents were carved, their eyes set with great glinting emeralds.
Boom. The original entrance.
The original entrance.
Yeah, seems like it has to be.
Yes, yeah. It's like that. That's definitely entrance. Got like the Salazar Slytherin flair of authenticity. It's yeah, like, you know when you see it.
Right, yeah. Not this like bathroom sink scratching.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
No.
Does it seem odd at all that the snake skin is outside the door and not inside the door?
I mean, you got a molt, you know?
You got to, it's like, I don't have time. I don't have time to get back.
Yeah.
I'm doing it right here.
It's like, you know, Tom Riddle's song was like, you can't do that inside. It's like, can't wait.
Foreboding.
Can't wait.
People are going to be spooked.
Yeah. Yeah. Like no one's coming down here. What are you talking about?
This is a secret. That's the whole point.
Secret.
I made it so people can't know.
People can't know.
Yeah.
It's like, well, then why does it matter where I molt? Dude, you want the molt inside?
Yep. Yeah. But I do love the fact. Yeah. So then, you know, Harry basically, he's kind of got it like dialed in now. He looks at the emerald eyes, which seem to flicker, and he's able to say open in a low, faint hiss, and the serpents part as the wall cracked open. The halves slid smoothly out of sight, and Harry, shaking from head to foot, walked inside.
Yeah.
To which I just wrote, let's go!
That's what I said. Here we go!
Oh, that's so funny.
That's
yeah.
hilarious. Yeah. Here we go!
All right, we've reached the climax, you
we
guys.
We have. We are there. We are at the Heir of Slytherin.
Chapter,
oh my goodness.
Chapter 17.
Chapter 17. Who done it this whole time? It's Voldemort. It's always Voldemort.
It's always Voldemort. Spoilers in case you're
spoilers indeed. Let's see. Do we have a review?
Yes, we do. Do we have a review? I usually ask you.
Yeah, yeah, we do. In fact, it's from Abby W21NJ.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, yeah, great name. Says, years of extraordinary content to look forward to. Hey, brother, love the podcast. Can't wait for the new episode to drop every week. I'm so excited to have something to look forward to every Sunday for the next few years. My question is, if Dumbledore and Harry wanted to convince Fudge and to an extension Umbridge that Voldemort was in fact back, why didn't they just use the pensive to show Harry's memory from the graveyard? Seems like it would have saved them both a lot of trouble and unnecessary hate from the Ministry and Daily Prophet.
There are lots of instances where it does feel like if proper judicial process was involved,
yeah,
or national security, they would be delving into such matters to, like, I mean, it's the same thing like with Chamber of Secrets, where it's like, why is there no ministry presence? Why are there not, like, you know, they have the teachers out in the middle of the night, like, exhausting themselves, patrolling the hallways. Like, Aurors should be there.
Yeah, like, absolutely. There should be people besides teachers protecting the school at this point.
Yes, yeah. It's definitely, like, one of those things. I think it's a great question. And I can't tell if this is like one of those things, like, where is it like any amount of like Dumbledore's, you know, stubbornness is coming into play. And it's like, look, if you can't follow all of the evidence, I'm not going to spell it out for you. Like, I've got too much other stuff on my mind,
right,
to go through and bring you in so that you can just like look at the memory and see, in fact, because I don't know that, or like possibly, I mean, we know that the Pensieve is theoretically found at the location where Hogwarts School is built.
Yeah.
So it could be the case that its existence is a very closely guarded secret.
Oh, that could be.
We've talked a little bit before about how the sorting ceremony is not something that incoming students seem to be capable of being aware of.
Right.
We've always sort of theorized there's like a little bit of like a potential like Fidelius charm that prevents like Fred and George from telling Ron, like, yeah, you just go and sit on a stool and like they'll put the sorting hat on. Like, because they don't want students prepared to try to like counter the hat's decisions.
Right.
Despite the fact that they do sort rather early on in their lives. It's like the only reason I bring that up is because like when it comes to like Hogwarts artifacts in particular, maybe there's something to be said about like some built-in secrecy as to like not let castle secrets,
yeah, like out. Get out. I think the other thing, my other thought is that like even if they did that, even if Harry had extracted his memory and put it in the pensive, and like, yeah, Fudge goes down there and like watches it, like I still don't think it would have mattered.
You don't think,
like,
so?
I don't think it would have mattered, because Fudge is already so convinced that like it's all a plot. And it's like the fact, you're right, the pensive seems like it's a pretty singular object, more or less.
Yes, yeah, I think,
and
so.
So it's,
yeah,
like, you know, I think he could talk himself into believing that like this object is of Dumbledore's own design and therefore it's not trustworthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Plus, even if he'd seen it, even if he knows about pensives, like, we know that you can alter memories. Like, Slughorn does this exact thing. That's like half of what Harry's tracking down.
That's a good point as well. You know? So if anybody knows anything about pensives, they may also be aware that it's like, well, you've just altered his memory. It's like, clearly I haven't, because it's not like all congealed and stuff like Slughorn's,
right,
is. But I mean, Fudge doesn't want to see the truth.
Right. That's like, the thing. He's like, yeah, he is determined for it not to be true.
Yeah. It's incredibly inconvenient for him to have to face down the reality that Voldemort is in fact returned and everything that comes with that and what it's going to mean for his potential, you know, to maintain his nice cushy position of being a figurehead in the wizarding world.
Right.
You know, it's going to, it stands to remove his power. So it's easier to just ignore it and hope it goes away than bring a whole bunch of attention to it and have to deal with all those ramifications.
Right.
That seems a lot more Fudge-like.
Yeah, it does. So
I was trying to give him an out.
Right.
But I don't know why.
Yeah. I think no matter what, he is going to think this is just phooey. It's all a plot by Dumbledore. He doesn't even think it's like possible for Voldemort to come back, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, it's not. That is so outside the realm of like, wait, what? Voldemort's back? Are you kidding? No. Like, What?
I'm not here for it.
I'm not here for it because it's not even possible. The only reason you could possibly say that is to take me down. Like that's the only reason I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, like, and that's a big one too. Is like, you know, you don't. It's hard to like get into the mind of somebody who's clearly like at the head of the entire wizarding world. But like Fudge has massive insecurity about the fact that all Dumbledore would have to do is throw his name in the hat and he would be a shoo-in.
Oh, to get to be minister.
Like,
yeah.
Nobody would fight it for a second.
Yeah.
And so any amount of like credibility that he could lend to Dumbledore is not something that he really wants to do, because that would be like building up the credentials of somebody you might see as a potential competitor, even right. though we know that Dumbledore doesn't want the job.
Yeah, we do. So there you go. I think that's why it doesn't matter that if they sell the memory or not, because Fudge can't be sold either way.
Excellent question, though.
Excellent question.
Thank you so much for the review, as always. If you guys would like to potentially have your review read in the future, it helps the show a lot out for discoverability. So if you wouldn't mind going and leaving us a quick 5-star and a note and a question, we'd be happy to do our best to see if we can't answer it for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always impressed with the questions people come up with.
I know. I feel like it's led to like so many like main channel SCB videos.
I know. Yeah. If I could leave a review on the reviews that people give, I would give it 5 stars.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Same. All right. Well, I think that is going to do it for us today, but make sure you join us next week for the climax of the Chamber of Secrets. We are heading into Chapter 17, The Heir of Slytherin, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.